At this time, we'll be looking at Jeremiah 31. I was thinking, as I was looking at this reference, I was thinking, Jeremiah 31:31. It's not a verse that would come to my mind, but it's one that we should remember ourselves also. The days are coming, declares the Lord, when I will make a new covenant with the people of Israel and with the people of Judah. It will not be like the covenant I made with their ancestors when I took them by the hand to lead them out of Egypt, because they broke my covenant, though I was a husband to them, declares the Lord. This is the covenant I will make with the people of Israel after that time, declares the Lord. I will put my law in their minds and write it on their hearts, and I will be their God, and they will be my people. No longer will they teach their neighbor or say to one another, "Know the Lord," because they will all know me, from the least of them to the greatest, declares the Lord. For I will forgive their wickedness and will remember their sins no more. Blessings to you, Wayne.
It is really good to be back here. Even if we are at a distance from each other, we're in the same room and we are live, unless you listen later. It feels good to be together. It also feels good to have had a break in something of, as I would see it, solidarity with our people in this world, where we, in order for the safety of our race of people, decide to be distant from each other for a period of time. I think of our connection to those other people, and yet it's good to be back here together. I enjoyed, actually, the creativity of our distant worship services. The format that you experienced and we did together, to give credit where it is due, comes from a friend of mine, Sandy Drescher Lehman, who is a pastor at Methacton Mennonite Church. They've been doing this, except when they are able to meet outdoors, since March. They have a building about a third the size of this room, and they can't meet safely together. And so they've been doing that for this whole time and still feel connected together. So it was fun to do something a little bit different. Challenges do bring out creativity. I loved this mosaic idea here too, and the fingerprints this morning. And though this is a little bit weird, I'll say, my own sense, the communion elements, you'll check it out later. There's a little clear tab over top of the wafer, which you take off first, not now, but I'll tell you later. And then, after you eat the bread, then you drink the cup. I think you can figure that one out. This thing was invented some years ago in order to accommodate large gatherings of people. If you remember, the Promise Keepers was a big deal some years ago. And so in order to have communion with these 5, 10, 20,000 people together, they came up with this, which I admit some of us made fun of at that time. Now here we are. Who knew we would be here in this place, in this way, in this place of being in this world? I get to be a guest speaker. It's a privilege sometimes at various churches. I like to get there early to get oriented, and sometimes early enough to walk through the cemetery, which is instructive. I like to look at the names of people, and later, maybe I know some of the folks at the church, maybe I'll meet some of them later, maybe they're relatives, but I just pick up something. It's a little bit of research, I guess, just walking through a cemetery. And in many churches that have been around long enough, there's a one date that will stand out. 1918. The date of the great flu epidemic of 100 plus years ago, in the midst of a world war, the First World War. That date is very prominent in many cemeteries. This may be a time like that where you will be telling your grandchildren about it. Oh, wait, some of you do have grandchildren. Okay, they will know about it. They will be telling their grandchildren. And as Chris mentioned, some of us feel a sense of weight, fatigue, like we've been carrying burdens for a period of time. The last couple of days, I have felt a fatigue in a way I haven't pretty much up to this point. A fatigue of elation, for one, a fatigue of guilt, and a fatigue of chemistry. I learned this week that St. Luke's health system in Bethlehem, Easton, was offering the vaccine to clergy. So I called them up, got on the list, I got inoculated on Friday morning. Wow, cool. It was easy. And I felt like it was a good thing to do. And then later that day, watching the news, I learned that in this country anyway, the supply of vaccine is not what they thought it was, that there is actually a shortage in lots of areas. And so on the day that I felt elation and excitement, I felt guilt. There are a lot of people who should be ahead of me in this line. So I was feeling that. And then the chemistry kicked in. Yeah, there's a bit of fatigue, as those of you who have had number one and two will know. So we feel this tension. The excitement of being connected and the weight of endurance. Even the most positive people find it challenging to be hopeful. I know many of you experience that kind of emotional tension, whiplash, on a daily basis. I feel privileged to currently be a part of this faith community where we can support each other and where we can say what we feel and what we are experiencing and know that we will get support from other folks. It feels good. We can look forward in hope together. To quote a prophet whose vision and work we honor tomorrow, part of a famous speech, really, a sermon. He says, "Let us not wallow in the valley of despair. I say to you today, my friends, and so, even though we face the difficulties of today and tomorrow, I still have a dream. It is a dream deeply rooted in the American dream. I have a dream that one day this nation will rise up and live out the true meaning of its creed. We hold these truths to be self-evident that all men are created equal. I have a dream that one day on the red hills of Georgia, the sons of former slaves and the sons of former slave owners will be able to sit down together at the table of brotherhood. I have a dream that my four little children will one day live in a nation where they will not be judged by the color of their skin, but by the content of their character. I have a dream today. Though it is dangerous, really dangerous, to connect the dream of a religion to the dream of the American people. What Martin Luther King said that day in 1963 is still worth hearing, maybe now more than ever. It is prophetic in the classic and the real sense. Prophecy is not so much a prediction of what will happen as it is holding out the possibility of what could happen, what can happen if we and God work together. And it's prophetic in a predictive sense. If we believe that God holds the ultimate destiny of the world in graceful, just hands. Jeremiah, we heard from, describes God's desire, a new covenant in our minds, in our hearts, not in writing. I will put my law in their minds and write it on their hearts. I will be their God, and they will be my people. No longer will they teach their neighbor or say to one another, "Know the Lord," because they will all know me, from the least to the greatest, declares the Lord, for I will forgive their sins and remember their sins no more. We as followers of Jesus believe that we are moving beyond law in the sense of legalism. Though it may not always be true technically, we are still pretty legalistic at times. Paul in his letters spoke of not trusting in following rules, but in welcoming the grace of God. He's speaking of the same thing as Jeremiah when Jeremiah spoke of law, teaching your neighbor to know the Lord. Jeremiah looks to a time when there's no need of that. There's no need of that because we will all know within. It will be on our hearts. It will be written on our minds. We're not there yet. I wish that we were. You probably wish that we were. Just as I wish Dr. King's dream had come true. I wish it was safe to assume that we were all listening and that we all know God speaking to us within, and that we are all hearing well, that we are able to respond in ways that fit with the way of Jesus. We may intend that, but we're not there yet. As Paul said in Galatians 3, the law is our guardian until Christ came that we might be justified by faith and live by the Spirit. The law given is the teaching, the structure, the form, as we live into that place where it will be written within us. The law is when we teach each other, when we remind each other that there are good and not good ways to behave, and some that we should not at all behave. There are things that reflect the wonder and beauty of God's creation at its best. And there are things to avoid and things never to do. Will it not be lovely when there's a time when we don't need to condemn violence and abuse? Because it will not be done. I eagerly await a time when we don't talk about politics, not because we're afraid to disagree, but because we know that we all follow the ways of Jesus. Until then, we venture into sticky places because we don't all know yet, and none of us knows perfectly. We look to a time. We desire a time when these teachings are an impulse that's written within, when we actually agree and actually follow, when it's no longer necessary to teach each other, when we know that it's no longer necessary to pray God's kingdom come because it will be here. To move forward to that point, when we no longer need words, when we no longer need to teach each other, as we're moving toward that point, we have words. We have teaching. We have a covenant. There will be a time when we don't need or desire a document like this. But rather than a certain point in time when we've passed the test or we reached perfection, I wonder if it will be more like we will need it sometimes and not need it other times. It will be partially written within us, even as we remind each other to write it within ourselves. There will be times when we need it more and times when we need it less. This covenant is not legalistic. It doesn't define a singular truth, but various angles, much as the scriptures do, point us in a direction. We assume that we don't agree on everything, but that in some things it's important to differ, and some things are too important to not be honest about our differences. But our aim is to make the practices of it internal, so that we can discern more easily and live in God's ways without wondering if we're doing the right thing. And we'll get there. We will get there. Then, says Jeremiah, we'll be forgiven, the past will be forgotten, it will be like a tombstone in the cemetery. Then we will forgive, putting behind the past. There's a time for everything. Again, this week I thought of the invitation by the elders to periodically fast in some way, focusing on the search, the openness to the next pastor of this congregation, and bigger than that, what will the future look like for this congregation? And it's important to do that, fasting from food perhaps, and maybe our distance is a fast too. There's a time to defer a privilege and a time to not fast. A time to celebrate by eating together, which I know we eagerly desire to do. I've had lunches and dinners with a few of you, and I know we want to do more, and we choose not to right now. It was not casual, though, I think, that the earliest followers of Jesus recognized that he was most present with them as our risen Savior when they ate together. The earliest experiences of him showing up were as they broke bread. And they instituted that into a ritual of breaking bread, eating and drinking, to remember that he's with us. He is with us. And so, we eat symbolically together. It's a celebration of God leading us into that reality when we know the ways of God for ourselves and for other people and how we behave. So we break bread and enjoy the cup in hope, in the promise that there will be a day when we all know the Lord, when we all know more fully than we do now, when we all know and do God's ways. Till then, it's a reminder. When we eat this bread and drink this cup, we remember that Jesus died for us and that in dying, we live to a new life. Amen. Thank you.